This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You, sir, or madam, are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 202, sponsored by Iverse Comics, In-Stock Trades, and iFanboy listeners like you.
Neither of those apply to me.
What?
Are you a sprinter?
What?
She was a real royal lady, true patron of the arts. Said the best country singers die in the back of classic cars. So if I ever got too hungry for a suitcase or guitar, to think of him all alone in the dark.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 202. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And I hope it's Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Oh, no. The three of us come from the website iFanboy.com, which is all about comic books. We read a ton of comic books, and every week one of us picks the best comic book that we read that came out that week, writes a Pick of the Week review on iFanboy.com that you can go read, and then we come here on the podcast to talk about that book, as well as the other books that came out that week, as well as the books that you, the iFanboy community, are enjoying, and anything else that comes up. Before we get started, though, we're going to warn you that we are actually talking about the books that came out this week and what happened in them, so we're going to talk about the events that occurred within the pages of said comic books. Therefore, or if you haven't read your books, it might get what they call spoiled. So press pause, come back, listen later, or be warned. Connor had to pick this week, and why don't you explain yourself, mister? Moon Knight.
Yes, Vengeance of Moon Knight number 1 was the pick of the week. I mean, we've been doing this for almost 10 years. Next year will be their 10th year of doing picks of the week. And I think you guys know as well as I do that when you finish reading your book, sometimes the pick of the week is staring at you. Sometimes you've got a choice of a couple. Sometimes you've got nothing.
Sometimes it looks in your soul.
Right. It looks deep into your eyes, yeah. And then it takes you to bed.
Other days, you just make it up. I shouldn't have said that.
But this was a weird week in that I had a lot of books that I really loved. I gave out like 3 or 4 5s. Yet, none of them at first really stood out. Like, I looked at all these books that I really enjoyed. There's a lot of them. But there was no compelling book that really leaped out of the pack, which is unusual. Normally, one of them does. If you're an avid iFanboy follower, you notice that the pick went up way later than I normally get it up, because what I did was I walked away from the books for a while. I put them down. I watched some TV. I figured I'd let my subconscious work on it.
I just can't be with you right now. I need time.
It's exactly. So I went through a whole bunch of stages. For a while, it was Batman: Streets of Gotham. And then I thought, no, it wasn't that one. Then it was Amazing Spider-Man for a while. And then I thought, no. And then it was, even for a brief moment, it was G.I. Joe Origins, and I thought, no. And then I really just sort of didn't think about it. And the book that kept popping up back in my head was Vengeance of Moon Knight number 1, which was a book I wasn't even planning on buying until the last minute. That was the pick of the week because it was the one book I kept thinking I wanted to really read the next part. I really wanted to see what was going to happen next. And it's partially because the first issue was so exciting. And now Moon Knight is a character who I've always kind of liked in a strange way that I can't explain.
Like, yeah, because you're the Batman guy.
It's partially that he's Marvel's crazy Batman. Like, he's the crazy rich guy who fights crime. Batman's crazy, but this guy's openly crazy.
Yeah.
But also, like, I find his costume strangely compelling. Like, why does this guy wear all white and how does he keep it clean?
Right.
He's got the same stuff that the Punisher gloves are made of.
Right. I mean, I can't walk around, you know, take the subway and do stuff all day long in New York and not come back with dirt, you know, some dirt on my clothes. Whereas
he looks really good in white pants, though.
I know. I might start wearing white pants now.
That one time I saw you in those tight white pants. Sorry, it's just such a funny image.
Let's not think about it. So I always liked Moon Knight throughout the years, and I remember when they rebooted Moon Knight in 06.
That's why I didn't buy this issue until after I saw that was your pick, because that series left a bad taste in my mouth.
You and I don't think Josh did, but you and I bought Moon Knight when they rebooted it.
I was like, yeah, Moon Knight, bring it on, yeah.
And I think I lasted two issues, and I couldn't – the story was impenetrable, and the art – I didn't like the art. It was David Finch.
I dropped that after like two issues too, right?
No, you didn't, because we all know the big story in episode 50 where you – slipped and admitted still buying it, and that was like 6 months later.
But I dropped it immediately after that, after the public humiliation.
When I heard about this book originally coming back, I had no interest in it. Then I saw that Jerome Pena was going to be the artist, and Jerome Pena is a guy who drew the later part of Fear Agent, and who's someone who Josh picked a year ago as an artist to watch out for, and someone I really like. And I hadn't bought his stuff on Punisher because Punisher is not really a character I like, but I do, you know, have that weird affinity for Moon Knight, and he was drawing it, so I figured I would look. And my God, this is a gorgeous book. This is a book that I thought was the best-looking book in a week where you had Ivan Reis on Blackest Night and you had Jesus Saez on Brave and the Bold, who I really like. You had a lot of good, strong artists. You had Brian Hitch, but Moon Knight was just gorgeous. I mean, I don't know.
Big, like, 3 and 4 panel action pages, these big spacious pages.
What I just thought was amazing about this after I picked it up, what blew me away about a painting was just the palette, too, and, like, how Moon Knight, like, my last image of Moon Knight was
really dark.
Was really dark Finch, all, you know, sketchy and stuff like that. The majority of this book takes place in daylight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks great, the two-page spread with the credits where Moon Knight on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
That's the one I was like, this isn't, you know, this isn't your mother's Moon Knight. I don't know.
No, and it's not even your mother's Opinia. It's a little sketchier.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we often complain about the Marvel coloring, how it overpowers some art.
Yeah.
But here, the color is fantastic. It gives it a depth.
Yeah.
It's almost painterly, but not in a painterly style.
It is similar to
Punisher.
The Punisher, but it looks like I don't know if Dan Brown colored Opinia on the Punisher as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he did because it looks very similar. But for some reason, it's either they figured it out or it's working, or I don't.
It fits better with this story. Whatever reason, I loved the work on the Punisher that he did. I didn't so much love the production of it, but I thought that this worked a little better. It's just similar to that. That sketchiness was definitely in the other one, but no, it's the same thing. Like I was just going through it. Like this looks great. This looks like I want to see this guy do as much work as possible. And I mean,
I was literally pouring over every page, and I spent more time in every page of this book than any other book this week. It was just gorgeous to look at. Right off the top, that was what got me at first. And then, I mean, the story is standard. This is a character who's been gone, apparently. I mean, I know nothing about the last series. I dropped after two issues. And you don't need to know anything. You just need to know he was gone, now he's back, and he basically just foils a bunch of crime. And it really wasn't that complex, but it was really exciting, and Opinia drew some fantastic action sequences. And I thought the writer, was it Hurwitz?
Hurwitz.
Yeah, who's
Greg Hurwitz? Wasn't he in Bad Religion? No, wait.
He was. Oh, my God. There was a guy named Greg Hurwitz in Bad Religion with two G's in his name. Ooh, I wonder.
It's not.
That'd be awesome if it was. Okay, so the guy from Circle Jerks was your accountant.
He was like a replacement drummer, 3 down, I think. And that was only the 1 year. It's true.
But he did a good job of giving you enough information to know that stuff had happened in the past and how it affected Moon Knight, but not to make you feel like you needed to know. And you sort of moved on, and here we are. And you know, it wasn't that deep, and there wasn't a lot going on, but it was very, what did happen was very exciting. A lot of great little touches. I felt like I had a good handle on the character by the end of it. The whole idea of the daytime fighting is, I guess, in the past he was spending most of the time at night. And he comes back and says, nope, now you're going to know I'm here. You're going to see me. I'm going to be out in the open. You know, everyone's going to know Moon Knight's back. And so he goes out in the middle of Times Square, and he's on the Jumbotron, and he's, you know, busting up bank robberies. And
My favorite bit stuff in that was he's taken off, and he's swinging around basically in Times Square, and there's a giant poster or billboard of Norman Osborn's head. And he swings by and he scrapes his feet along it. And when he goes away, he left a little Hitler mustache on Osborn.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, and I had to like, is that a shadow? No, he did that on purpose.
Well, because that's the thing is that, I mean, the whole thing about Moon Knight is that he's crazy and he's actually multiple personalities and all stuff like that. So you don't know what you're going to get. And so I'll be curious to see how Hurwitz works that into this new, you know, incarnation.
Well, the thing is, at the end of it, I wasn't entirely clear what had happened or what's going on. But I don't think I don't think that was so much a fault of storytelling. I think it was you're going to find out.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I took it, because I think the one criticism you could hear for this, and I think it would be sort of wrong criticism, is that, you know, like, well, it wasn't really clear what was happening. It's like I was just treating it like it was a new story that I have to learn about as we go.
And it was, and I think they did a really good job of giving you enough to hang on to. I wasn't totally lost at all. I really didn't have trouble following anything. I don't know a thing about Bushman, but I got the sense of his...
What a ridiculous villain. Is it racist? I'm not even sure, but it's ridiculous, if nothing else.
You know, number one, just the most important thing was I was just blown away by the art. It was beautiful. I mean, I'm still looking at every page now, and, you know, the very end, last scene with the slow zoom in on Moon Knight standing on the roof, and it's just gorgeous. These are big, bright panels.
I was very impressed by the art. Very, very impressed.
You know, what's difficult is doing word balloons with Bushman's tribal click language. It's very, it's just like, you, how do you let her? It's very hard.
That's bad.
Is that racist?
I think that might have been.
He's a Bushman.
Oh, God. So now the one thing I didn't mind, but I know people did mind, was at the very end of this issue, Moon Knight standing on the roof and he's surveying the scene, and then the sentry shows up.
Yeah,
That is.
I didn't have a problem with it because nothing's happened yet. But
that is the new stabbing of Elektra. That shot. That was at the end of that.
Wait a minute. I take umbrage with you using that term. I know what you mean in terms that it's a shot that has been reused and reused and reused, but by no way does the sentry coming down from the sun, you know, looking up at the sentry, equal the Elektra getting stabbed scene.
I don't mean that. Yeah. I mean it's a cheap little thing that they keep using. The same way that, like, when you turn the last page of a DC comic and it's either Batman or Superman standing there,
yeah,
and it's the shit just got real page, and like you've got, like, we've seen it a lot, so it's very difficult to do it in a way that doesn't make me go, eh.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you could look at it as being, here are Marvel's two craziest superheroes.
Yeah, true. Good point.
It's true.
No, these are the two openly insane, acknowledged insane superheroes in the Marvel Universe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll have a talk, like a therapeutic talk. Maybe they'll share meds.
And then Starman from JSA shows up, which will be odd, but awesome. He's like, we should go out for ice cream. Be awesome.
This is a diametrically opposed to the last series, whereas when I finished that first issue, I was like, oh, what the fuck was that? This was like, oh, this was awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Everything about it.
Are we doing a thing now where we're not ever going to pick Blackest Night as pick of the week just for spite?
Listen, you.
Or are we letting it build up until, like, the last, like, issue 8, and when everyone will just be just clamoring for it?
We talked about this at the dedication to the memorial for the day you picked Scalped over Blackest Night number 1.
Yeah.
Which is still a national tragedy.
Yeah.
Blackest Night number 3 was a really fun book. I gave it 5 stars on iFanboy. It just, to me, of the 3, it was the weakest. And by, mm-hmm. and that's like saying this was the weakest pizza. Like, it was still good.
Oh, I didn't think it was the weakest. I thought it definitely.
Well, it's the most middle chapter. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, the first issue was fantastic and had all these great moments, and the second issue had a lot of good stuff too. But this is more, you know, we're settling into the middle.
But the thing
there's
is,
a lot of
yeah,
explaining.
You say weak as in not, and I interpret weak as not good. But,
no, I said that's a 5-star book. It's the weakest of the good pizza that you're eating. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but I don't think weak is an accurate term. I think the term, it was very talky, because there's a lot of stuff. But the talky that was going on was, I thought that there was a great sequence between Barry and Hal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that great conversation. Awesome Firestorm stuff. If you're a Firestorm fan, this was your issue. And finally, the Indigo Tribe woman speaks and pretty much in that 2-page vertical spread lays it out. You know, I mean, basically explain all, you know, every question I had about all the lanterns and all their origins, how they're going to, you know, what the purpose and what this war is going to be and everything. And we finally see a weakness to the Black Lanterns.
She's kind of a deus ex machina.
Well, yeah, but it's a 7-issue series. There are 8-issue eight. Series. There's going to be one eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a reason why that term.
But also, well, not really, because we've seen them a lot. It's not like she showed up for the first time out of nowhere.
Well, this is the first time she's spoken English.
No, but they've been around. It's not
yeah,
like
but we had no idea what they we had no idea what their powers were, how they worked.
No, but a Deus Ex Machina shows up at the end. You've never seen them before. Saves the day. Yeah. We've seen these lanterns before.
She's showing up
She's
in the middle
MacGuffin.
And go, wait, I can explain. And they go, oh, okay, that'll work.
Right, but it's comic books. What do you expect? I mean, it's not.
That's no. See, that is a horrible excuse for anything, and I will not accept that.
I would say it's fiction. What do you expect? That happens in fiction and
yeah,
all
exactly.
things.
That, yeah, there you go.
It's adventure fiction. There's always something like that.
Here's what I'm realizing about Blackest Night for me. I enjoy it. I really like it a lot, and it's fun, but it's not my favorite kind of comic book. which is why I probably never ended up picking it. Like, it's fun.
Because you hate fun.
No, it's just like every page is like overload. Like, it's just a billion things happening about a bunch of stuff all at the same time. And like, that's not my favorite kind of story. I could see why it would be for a lot of people.
Well, it's an action
movie.
I can enjoy it,
but it's not going to be my favorite thing. That's what the thing is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen is we're going to roll around to issue 8. It's going to be Josh's week, and we're going to have to poison him.
Yeah, exactly. We're going
to
have to.
Hey, you had the chance to put things right. I was hoping
this
that you
was.
I told you
this is my least favorite of the three.
Yeah.
So, you know, jerk.
I'm not the only one. You can come up with all the excuses you want.
It's your name on the statue, not mine.
It was good, though.
I stand by that. Was a fantastic scalped issue, is what it was.
It was, but Black Knight was better.
Anyway,
how did this get to be my fault? That was
because you had number one. That was the best issue. It was fun. I thought the art was a little bit off, like a slightly. He's drawing a lot of stuff. So
yeah, I did know. The art was a little weaker than usual. Yeah,
he's drawing a lot, so I'm cutting him lots of slack. But it was good. It was good. It was a 5-star book, but the least exciting of the three. So it wasn't ever a consideration. What was a consideration was Amazing Spider-Man 605, which was like a 50s plus page. Behemoth.
Why?
I don't know why.
Why was it so, like, are we not getting issued? Well, okay, well, I got a couple things. First off, and we picked it on iFanboy.com. Connor, you picked it on the covers post. I love this cover.
Yes.
It was fantastic. It was even better when someone in my comic book store speculated, like, oh, that's Mary Jane and Peter's baby from the 90s. And I was like, really? I got excited by that prospect. So I love the cover, and then I started reading it, and I thought it was really... This was almost my pick, but it was so wildly all over the place. Like, I loved the first story. I thought the art in the first story was great, and the Mary Jane point of view was really good. And then the second story with the Luke Ross art was really, really good. But then I thought the artist in the last part of it really, like, it just the tone was just too much, even though it was a big scene with the Mets.
Although I thought you'd be mad about that because he's dreaming himself being in the bottom of the ninth. And he's at Shea, and he's wearing an away uniform.
Yeah, I did notice that, actually. Well, no, he never says he's at Shea. He never says he's at Shea.
It's bottom of the ninth,
yeah,
so they're at Shea.
Yeah. It's a gray uniform. I did notice that. Yeah, Mr. Metz in the background, yeah. But that said, I thought the art in the third story was really kind of weak.
I really liked the story.
It was the funniest story. Yeah, it was hysterical. It was great. I just didn't like the art.
This issue, the cover was Little Cupid Spider-Man, and this issue was all about the relationships. The first story was Mary Jane leading up to her going to the wedding. So she's in Hollywood with her Hollywood boyfriend who's just got the role of Captain America in The Day America Died. What I really liked in this issue was, so they're actors and he got his script. He got cast as Steve Rogers, and they talk about how three things are Oscar bait: Holocaust victims, disabled people, and dead superheroes. I like how in the Marvel Universe they played dead superheroes and win Oscars.
Fred Van Lente is great on this book.
He's doing great. Yeah, agreed.
I mean, I really, really liked his issues. They're completely different than the Joe Kelly issues, which I really liked before.
Yeah.
But I'm really digging it.
Yeah.
Second story was that was my least favorite, although I liked it.
Yeah, I agree with you. The second one was the weakest.
But these were all great, and they were all fun. I love these relationship angles and stories, and Spider-Man trying to find a date, and he meets a girl who's in distress, and they agree to meet for a date and get there, and she's got a boyfriend, but she just wants to get his autograph. It's like, fuck.
Yeah, it was very funny. A lot of laugh-out-loud moments. The whole Norman trying to get Peter up on a dating website and those scenes, those sequences. As well as the comedy of, so Peter finally told off his non-girlfriend, his roommate who's pretending, who thinks that they're dating. He finally told her, he's like, listen, we're not dating. She's like, but we had sex on the floor. He's like, listen, I know you're not going to believe it, but I don't care about secret identities. It wasn't me. The chameleon was being me. And she just looks at him and she's like, that's the worst excuse ever.
So, she punches him.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really, really funny. Really good, like almost sitcom level kind of humor. Yeah. You know, this could have been an annual, I thought. It had that annual feel. But anyway, but one thing that I wanted to bring up, not about the book itself. Did you notice, you might have skipped past it. Did you notice, and I thought I was dreaming, but did you notice the ad for the brand new ongoing Web of Spider-Man?
I did.
WTF?
WTF LOL.
Too much material they're putting out there.
My God.
Weekly
so is that
enough.
Is that 4 weeks a month now?
I don't know.
Unless they change, then maybe they change Amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been reported on some news or something like that. I haven't gotten to look it up yet. I'm sure everyone will correct it and point to the link where they explain it. But yeah, I was just like, I don't want another title. This is too good, and I only want to buy the one. It's not fair.
It's going to depend who's working on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yep. So speaking of depending on who's working on it, this week, Batman and Robin number 4 with Philip Tan, who is taking over from Frank Whiteley. What did you guys think?
Well, I didn't read it because I bought it, though, but because my shop owner gave me the variant cover. And I think
the tan cover?
And I think he did it as a joke because it was the tan cover. But it's actually sealed in plastic, and I don't want to open it because it's a variant.
What?
It came in a bag and a board, and there's a little sticker that says Batman and Robin, number 4, variant edition, and it's taped. And I didn't.
I'm going to point you to the YouTube video we made with us ripping
That's
open.
Retarded.
I'm going to sell it. I'm going to look for it on eBay because I don't want to read it anyway because I wasn't going to buy these issues because I'm not buying it until Cameron Stewart comes on.
You're going to miss a lot of story is my guess, and you're going to have a hard time at that point.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I thought story-wise it was real good.
Yep.
I'm not a fan of the art.
Yeah, the book, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it might have been. I followed it just fine most of the time. You know what? I think the book really shines the most, and this is one of the things that you want more of. But when Damian and Dick are just sitting there talking with each other, that's all that I really want out of this book. I'm like, get past all the other things that are happening. I just want to see them interact and do stuff. But I was left a few times confused by the art. Like I had to go back and follow the storytelling through again and see what had just happened.
It's too dark. It's too messy. I don't like the way he draws people. I'm just not a fan of his work. That's just the way it is. You know, I think there's two camps on this. I've talked to lots of people who don't like it, and lots of people do like it, and that's good. I'm jealous of those who do like it because they enjoyed it more than I did. I liked the story, but I had a hard time getting past the way everybody looked, and I didn't like that at all. Mm. People were expecting this to be Pick of the Week, and I was laughing as I was reading it because there was no way. No way.
Just 3 issues?
He's doing 3 issues, yes.
All right. Jason? Anyway, so that's that. I think that the writing was there. One of the things that – there's just all these other characters I don't seem to know sometimes, but I think that's kind of the point. Or I wonder if I'm supposed to know them because they're in the stuff that I didn't read and things like that. So
there's nobody in that issue you shouldn't not know. Unless yeah. I mean, the two main people are new.
Well, the thing is, like,
we don't know who that is.
I don't know anything about – I don't know anything about the Red Hood from before. Like it was,
doesn't matter. We don't know who it is under the mask. It's either Jason or it's somebody.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't know that.
I think you're outthinking yourself. You're thinking there's more to it than there is.
Absolutely. I cop to that completely.
My problem with the Red Hood is that the hood itself always doesn't look so much like a hood to me, more like a hard plastic helmet.
Red bullets.
It looks like a dildo.
Oh, I didn't think
that. Look on the cover.
I have the tan cover.
It's just sealed in plastic. You can't see it.
No, what I don't understand is how the hell is the Frank Quitely cover the common cover and the tan cover is the variant?
Operating under the assumption that DC thinks the artist is shit? No, DC thinks the artist is good.
What kind of backwards world is that? No, but at least Marvel makes the good artist the variant.
Because they're trying to sell more issues and they're going to trick people into thinking Quitely's drawn the inside.
Oh, good point. Very good point. Yeah. Wow. What does that say about Tan?
He sucks. That's what it says.
I love that.
It's Archie story time.
Oh, so where are we with Archie?
So last we left Archie, he had walked up memory lane, gone into the future, graduated college, moved to New York City, proposed to Veronica while Betty watched and cried in the background. And now it's time for the wedding and they're all getting ready and the guys are all nervous and the girls are all nervous and no one's talking to Betty. They're all dancing around her because they're worried she's going to freak out. And it gets to be wedding day and now the girls are all nervous. The guys are playing Xbox. They don't care, whatever. They're just dudes at a wedding. And they have a humongous wedding on Long Island, which is apparently where Riverdale was, and I forgot about that.
Nice.
But then that gets the infuriating part of the story where right before the wedding, Archie takes Betty aside and says he's always loved her like a sister. Granted, I haven't read Archie in like 18 years on a regular basis, but I mean, unless something big has happened in the last decade, that seems like it's a real betrayal of the entire triangle.
It's harsh, yeah.
He's like, oh, I've always loved you as a sister, and we'll be friends forever. And she's like, oh, okay, fine. And I just felt really sort of angry reading that.
Oh, man. Well, they're probably complex feelings that Archie's dealing with, and he's trying to rationalize his decision, you know.
I don't know. I just feel betrayed. Yeah. All
this might
years.
Be worse than the X-Men update. Jesus.
And so then they get married, of course, and there's some people in the crowd who probably are creators who I can't recognize, and Josie and the Pussycats, of course, play the reception.
Nice.
There's no other bands in Riverdale but them. Then we get ahead in the future a bit, and Archie's working himself to death at her father's company. He's at Lodge Enterprises. He's a vice president. He's fielding calls, and he's making deals, and he gets too much stress, and Reggie's out of work. He gives Reggie a job in sales, and this is like the harsh reality Archie book. And then He comes home from work with like four briefcases. Like, I'm not kidding. He's like carrying two in his hands. He's got them strapped to his back. And they're supposed to go out to have dinner with their friends. And he's just too tired. And Veronica lays it on him. She's pregnant.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun. Next month, the pregnancy and the babies.
Wow.
I know. His life very exciting.
Yeah. Archie's life just on the toilet.
And he wears a really awesome gold blazer at work.
Of course.
Brown pants.
Alrighty then. Thanks for the Archie update, Connor.
I think Podge Enterprises is porn from the way he's dressed. It's like Guccione. He's dressed like Guccione. He's got a red flower in his thing. Awesome. Good stuff.
Is Josh dead?
What? Oh, I'm sorry. Are we done? I went to my happy place. I used to call it the X-Men Forever Suite, but changed the name of it. Hey, you can get Archie on iVerse, can't you?
You can.
Well, there you go. We want to thank iVerse Comics for sponsoring our show and giving away an iPod Touch to a lucky winner, so we'll announce that soon. Everyone is all about digital comics and comics on the iPhone these days. If you're into that, then you have to check out iVerse Comics. They've just released a new version of their app, which is just 99 cents in the iTunes Music Store. And when you pay that 99 cents for your iPhone or for your Touch, you're going to get 30 free titles. 30 free whole comic books just for buying it. And then after that, you can add and buy separate titles. And when you buy the application just for iFanboy listeners, you'll be entered to win an iTunes gift card. There's more giveaways is what we're saying from iVerse Comics. So go over to iversemedia.com/iFanboy for all those details.
Excellent. Was very excited to see MODOK Rain Delay one shot on the pull list and read it. It's written and drawn by Ryan Dunleavy. And I love MODOK. I love everything there is about MODOK. And this absolutely delivered, was hysterical, had me cracking up. Then I noticed that it originally ran on Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited online and realized that I could have read it already. And I felt kind of silly.
I got it too. I thought it was half hysterical and half not as funny as it should have been.
There was some stuff that was laugh. The whole answer machine message scene.
Yeah, no, some of it was
hysterical.
Great. I love MODOK. I love making fun of MODOK. I loved MODOK in the Strange Tales book from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I love MODOK returning home for his high school reunion and still being afraid of the bullies. And,
so what did you like?
I just thought some of the gags fell flat and weren't as funny as they thought they were. But other than, I mean, the funny gags are really funny, and the not funny gags were not funny. So
I love the bullies want to get even with MODOK, and so they hire Box from Alpha Flight. That was really funny.
That was. Well, I mean, there was some really, really funny stuff in here. I liked when he was. I liked him at the reunion a lot. I liked all of that stuff.
Yeah, I love MODOK. Trying
to impress the cute girl, and she asks him who he's beaten, and he's, well, I haven't really beaten any, and she walks away. Like, he's not very impressive as a supervillain.
MODOK is the best. I love it.
Batman Streets of Gotham 4 was almost pick of the week. I love these stories about the people in the background. And what I mean by that is, in 1989, when Batman came out, they put out a couple of novels featuring short stories by like Isaac Asimov did a story, like some big name writer.
Wow.
And one of my favorite stories was somebody did a short about the guy who makes the costumes for the supervillains. I like those kind of stories, like people in the background. This issue is all about a character named the Broker, who finds you a hideout or a lair.
Oh, like a real estate agent.
Yeah, he's a broker to the villains. So like, you come to him, you say you need a lair with this kind of theme, and he finds one. Or you need an abattoir, and that's what this one's about, where Mr. Zazz needs a place to house and kill little kids. And it's about how much emotional distance can you keep from this when this is going on around you. And Dini does this stuff really strong, you know, the background stuff. And this is totally, you could see it as an episode of Batman the Animated Series. You know, that show would meander off to the side and focus on stuff on the side. And this was a really great issue on that. And there was some good Damien stuff in here, too. Like, when they go to confront the broker, he's reading the brochures. $15 million for 3 bedrooms? That's obscene. Like, it was just really, really, really nice slice of life, but in a fucked up Gotham City way stuff. And the co-feature is the Manhunter story, which is great. And this one had art from Jeremy Hahn, and it was awesome.
Very cool. Yeah.
Real good.
So you said G.I. Joe Origins number 7 was in the running?
Josh, are you still on this, or is it just...
Yeah, no. Really good issue. Really good issue.
I loved this issue.
Just take a character, and I was... It's funny because it seems like one of the running themes for all the G.I. Joe books is that one of the characters goes rogue. Like it seems like it's happened to, like, it's Chuckles, Scarlet, Snake Eyes, and now Mainframe, and I think Duke, and what, like... It's just who else can go rogue? I don't know. Let's make Hawk angry. But regardless of that, no, it was a fun issue. It was focusing on like a character who wasn't all that operational, Mainframe. And like in the beginning.
The computer geek.
I love Mainframe.
Yeah.
Mainframe
in the beginning, the mission goes foobar and a bunch of people get killed, which they seem to get over really quickly, by the way. And then, but he's following all this computer information the whole time about trying to find, you know, he now thinks that there's a Cobra and that they should be going after him. Nobody believes him. So
he's basically stuck in a bed because when the mission goes bad, he gets hurt. So he's stuck in the hospital for a while. They give him a laptop and he's been combing through data and he sees a pattern in the data that no one else recognizes. And he sees it as this group called Cobra, but everybody thinks he's crazy. And he's the only one that sees it in the data because he's the only one that can see it. The only one, you know, recognizes all the patterns.
See through the matrix.
That's what the cover is. Sort of, yeah. What the cover is. And then so he decides the only way to prove it to everybody is to go rogue and prove it himself.
There's a really nice scene with Snake Eyes where he's, like, taken off and Snake Eyes is like, all right, you go do your thing, son. But yeah. You know, every time Snake Eyes shows up in that book, if they keep it's always really good when he's in it, but when they keep it really slight, it even has more punch, so that was kind of neat. I see that X Factor number 40 is on the list next.
Well, yeah. Well, before talking about the actual book, I had to laugh because on the recap page at the very bottom of it, it's talking about what's going on in the because we got two storylines going. We got what's going on in the future, what's going on in the present, and at the very bottom it says, meanwhile, Peter David is lobbying for Citi Field to be torn down and Shea Stadium to be rebuilt so the memory of the 2009 Mets can be utterly expunged, which made me laugh.
Did you laugh or did you cry?
A little bit of both. This book is getting really interesting. First off, we've got consistency on the art. Delandro, Valentin Delandro's art is, you know, continuing that kind of very similar Pablo Raimondi kind of same look for X Factor. But Doom looks like to be a ongoing character now in the future, and he kicks Cyclops' ass, showing, you know, a moment of lucidity because he's old and crazy. But then he turns out while they were in that minivan while they were transporting him, he built a little ray for his gun, and just showing that he's like, I was bored, I built it. You know, showing that Doom shouldn't be trifled with. But meanwhile, in the present, turns out the thing that Siren and Monet have been fighting turns out to be looks just like Jamie and looks like it's a dupe. And it looks like there's some ties to the future. So you've got these two parallel stories that are going on in the future and the present that are starting to tie together. The anticipation for the next issue is building with every issue. So I'm digging it. It's good stuff. Again, cool. The best X book, I think, going on right now.
I get these mixed up, but I'm the only one reading Walking Dead and issues, right? That's right. Invincible's Ron.
Yeah, I'm going to walk away now.
Soft cover and hard covers for
hard
Ron.
Covers, yep.
Hard covers. I won't give away anything other than this was my pick of the week. I had to think about it a little bit, but after I did, and because it was very simply one of those, this is Walking Dead number 65, part 4 of 5 of this story, Fear the Hunters, and it was just one of those ones where at the end there was a lot of badassery showcased. And basically, you know, if you think about it, Rick and his pitiful gang have been going around for all these issues and getting picked off, and this time they've got somebody else hunting them, and basically at the end of this they just go, you know what, we're badass, screw that, and they just sort of like turn the tables on them and kick ass at the end. And it was very much one of those moments at the last few pages of it. It was a really fun issue, and it was kind of unexpected because you're so much despair in this book all the time that when they just went, you know what, we're badass and we're gonna show it, it was totally fun. And I'm getting the sense that for people who are reading this in issues, there was a lot of really good response to this issue this week, so it was fun.
Before we talk about Ex Machina 45, I did not get it because my store got shorted. They didn't get any of it, so I don't know what happened, so don't spoil it for me.
Listen, there was a warning at the beginning of the show, Ron. You could have walked off
that. I know, but still.
You chose not to. If you remember last time, there was like the color spectrum power thing, and this is just ramping it up, and this is 40. This is number 45. 50 is the last issue of the whole thing. And stuff's moving. And it's funny because stuff doesn't feel like it's moving that often in this book for a while. And the girl who, you know, the journalist who got infected with the white power shows up, and there's some really tense scenes. And just, it was just a really good issue. I have a feeling I'm not surprised about this at all, given Brian Vaughn's track record, but I think it's going to end really strong.
Those last 5 issues that Brian K. Vaughn ever writes in comics.
Yeah, I know. Because this is his swan song, my friend.
Enjoy it while you can.
Somebody's got a villa payment to make.
X-Men Legacy Annual number 1 was the first issue penciled by the new ongoing artist on X-Men Legacy, Daniel Acuna. And I'm really liking Mike Carey's writing in the X-Men as I look back on the past year. Mike Carey's a great writer. If you remember, Daniel Acuna was on The Flash during the Dark Years. He was penciling for Wade, I believe. Right?
I like his art.
This is the thing about it, is that
on the right book.
Initially, I said, I'm like, oh, God, Acuna. And then as I'm reading it, I was like, you know, this isn't that bad. It's got this kind of like European kind of feel to it, you know, in terms of the
style. I like it. It's got a very interesting texture.
Yeah, but then I turn the page and I see his Wolverine, and it's possibly the worst Wolverine I've ever seen. where Wolverine, it's like this weird mask that doesn't quite fit, and his sideburns are sticking out from under it. It just looks – and then I'm watching like his – I'm reading his fight scenes, and just there's a lot of like distorted faces, you know, and just like not really like the – you know, I don't know. So it's like, it was weird because as I was reading it, I'm like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. And, oh, it's really bad. it's going to be a chore, I think, to read X-Men Legacy now.
I'm reading Mike Carey's second novel right now, his prose novel. He's good. Cool. I think he's a really good writer, actually. I just think his comics don't always work. Yeah. But
that last issue of The Unwritten was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
I heard that a lot.
I mean,
yeah.
It was like, that's the kind of stuff that he's really good on. He can do pretty well on franchise stuff, but when he gets to tell his kinds of stories, he's pretty much money.
Yep.
He did Hellblazer, right?
Yeah, he did Hellblazer for a long time.
His novels are very Hellblazerian.
Cool.
Blazerian. Yeah.
Blazerian.
Those are the Gagarian.
User reviews, I guess, are what we should go to now. If you want to write your own user reviews on the site, pick your comics, you get over, you can write on any book that you pick, and we'd like to spotlight a couple of them here. The first one is from Invasion Force, who talked about Dark Avengers number 9, story of 5 out of 5, and the art of 5 out of 5, with a pick of the week percentage of 0.45%. And he says, quote, Bendis has a gift for telling stories from the point of view of young people like Ultimate Peter Parker and Alexander Phobos God of Fear. Phobos is portrayed by Bendis and Diodato as a cute little kid who is confused by the politics of the situation in which he finds himself. It doesn't help that he's afraid of his father, who doesn't quite understand human politics either. Ares' portrayal as the ultimate overbearing father is just what one would expect from him. The conclusion makes some psychological sense, since Ares quite naturally does not know what to teach his son about the modern human world. This was a great issue. I really, really enjoyed this one. Felt a little more like the Bendis that I love.
Yeah.
Besides that, I have to give an enormous shout out to Diodato. He had some really nice pages in this. I don't love his style, but there were some really great layouts in this book that were really impressive.
And you were glossing over the big scene at the end when the Sentry's wife shoots the Sentry in the face.
Oh, right. Oh, I forgot all about that. Yeah. That's enough reason to like it.
One of my friends was like, "You're gonna love Dark Avengers." I'm like, "Why?" And I quickly read it. I'm like, "Oh, he's not going anywhere."
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I guess that's when I didn't really take it seriously, so I didn't even remark it.
Yeah.
But like, he's in the Moon Knight, for God's sakes.
Yeah, exactly.
The stuff that I really liked about it, though, was Ares and his kid interacting, and then Ares and Nick Fury. Like, those are really good scenes.
Yep.
I really enjoyed that stuff. It was a really good issue. I was glad
and
to
thought
see.
I thought the one page of Bullseye dialogue. I love that they're all eating pancakes.
I did notice they had breakfast together.
Yeah, they had breakfast.
which is a bit of a stretch because, you know.
Yeah.
So is the secret that Norman's dealing with, is that the...
He's the Goblin.
Faceless Sentry? At the beginning, I thought it was the Goblin, but by the end, they sort of make you feel that he's got the Sentry body in there or something he's got to deal with.
No, I thought it was the Goblin. That's happening at the same time.
Either that or he's just jerking off in there.
Or that. Ooh. Our next review comes from Akamu, who reviewed The Brave and the Bold number 27, gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and nobody's made it their pick of the week yet. And Akamu says, I recently read the trade paperback of Dial H for Hero, and I'm a Batman fan. I also haven't picked up a Straczynski book since One More Day. Not because I blame him for anything, he just hasn't written any titles I had any interest in. So I was excited to pick this issue up. It isn't the worst thing I've ever read. In fact, the story itself was pretty good. That he gave a 2 out of 5. I just hate that he ends the story by beating you over the head with the obvious moral of the story. I think he's been reading too much Stan Lee Silver Age comics. Without the ending, it's a pretty solid story.
I agree with Akamu. This was real good up until the end, and then he sort of hammers the moral home.
Yeah.
For like
really?
3 pages.
What a shock.
Yeah.
But it was real good, and Jesus Sayas, he was the artist. He did the really good Checkmate stuff, and Dial H for Heroes is a funky old school character who has got a, you know, like an old rotary dial, and when you dial it, you become the hero you need to be at the time.
Oh, that's cool. I like that idea.
So like in the beginning, he's a mental hero, and in the end, he's like a Superman-esque hero, and it was a fun little tale. I think Straczynski's biggest problem is long term storytelling, and when he's just doing one and done stories.
Yeah.
He might be better at it, so I bought this to see how it would go, and
yeah,
I enjoyed it.
His problem with long-term storytelling is that he doesn't actually finish the story.
Exactly. Oh, so if he's got the one issue to go, then he only has to do one.
He can't screw it up.
He's also – there's a bit of moralizing that goes on, which is interesting.
I don't mind it necessarily. It was out of character to have Batman be the one to stand there and
what happened? What was it?
Well, the thing was that Dial H for Heroes is a kid, and he's in Gotham visiting with his grandfather, and he turns the dial and becomes this mental character who sees – something horrible happens, so he goes back into bed and stays there. This down-on-his-luck guy breaks into the hotel, steals the dial, becomes a Superman character, saves a bunch of people, feels good about himself, and then dies in the course of saving people. And the kid had foreseen that as the mental character. He'd seen the next person to use the dial would die. So he left it out to be stolen so that somebody else would take it and die. So then Batman says, but also, you also allowed him to save all these people.
Yeah.
And he allowed this bad person to die well. So maybe it wasn't
that bad.
Doesn't sound
that bad. The idea wasn't bad. The idea was he stood there and did a speech for 2 pages.
Oh, that's
I bad. See. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
So that was where it sort of ground to a halt.
All right. But
the story itself was good.
Sounds like Straczynski's just flinging out a bunch of DC stories, so you'll get another chance next week.
It's got to work. Well, if you if you agree or disagree, go to ifanboy.com/comics and write a review of Brave and the Bold number 27. Tell everybody what you think. And you can also do your pull list and rate all your books and everything. And if you like Brave and the Bold, I believe they recently released a trade or a hardcover of collecting recent issues. And
they did.
You can pick that up at InStock Trades. InStockTrades.com. They're a great place to order your trade paperbacks and graphic novels. They've got discounts up to 37% off, free shipping on orders over $50, which comes in handy because if you're ordering more than $50, most likely the box is heavy and then it will cost more. But not at InStock Trades. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available to order, getting new stuff in every Wednesday when things come out. You can order anything in previews there. So if you do an order at InStockTrades.com, it usually ships within 48 hours. You can track your order and all that stuff. They are fantastic. Go to InStockTrades.com and do your shopping there.
So I'm skimming over this next email, and I'm seeing a lot of words. Anyway, somebody read that. I think this is going to get awkward.
Dave C. writes and says, "Something that has always puzzled me is the nature of Superman's love for Lois. As a Kryptonian, it seems to me that Superman's love for Lois can only ever be platonic and asexual. He's an alien of a lost world of a different species, in fact. So it doesn't make sense to me that he would be sexually attracted to a human. Now, I realize that this is the same universe where Nightwing dated Starfire and Kyle Rayner dated Jade, but I always thought that Superman's lack of sexual desire was a way to at least underscore his isolation as the sole survivor of an alien race. Sex is not necessarily for love to exist between individual, but be they homosexual, heterosexual, or anything between. But I think that somewhere along the line, that might be an issue, especially with the hordes of Kryptonians that now exist in the DCU. What say you guys? Am I making mountains out of molehills? Was this ever addressed in the comics?"
Jade was hot. So
Dave also
wasn't an alien. She was just green.
Yeah, she had the lady parts.
The idea that people in interspecies are not, you know, there's something biological that keeps you from being attracted to something interspecies, but that doesn't take into account the people that have sex with animals.
Right.
It's true. The furries.
The furries are just people dressed up.
Have sex with animals.
Yeah, and we're talking about bestiality. All right. Fantastic. Well, if the
it's sci-fi. This is sci-fi. You know, you have to sort of let that stuff go and enjoy the story.
It never bothered Kirk.
Never did bother Kirk. Didn't stop that guy.
Good point. I guess it goes down to a question of, you know, nature versus nurture, and that is sex the byproduct of emotional attraction or physical attraction? And in reality, it's probably a little bit of both. And what are the things that, if you build an intense relationship with someone who happens to be alien, you know, like unless you're physically repulsed by that alien, you know, like I wouldn't, you know, if I was a gay dude, I don't think I'd be courting Jabba the Hutt, but Chewie.
Really, I don't think gay's even close to the part of the problem there. it's not that, gross, he's a male.
No, but I was saying that I wouldn't, but, you know, because I assume Jabba's a dude, so, you know, that's why.
We don't know that.
Yeah, he's a guy.
He's a guy.
Is there lady? Yeah. There's lady huts?
Yeah, there are lady huts.
There was, yes, yep. There were lady huts. Nice.
That's right. Yep. Well, it's a story of universal love. No matter how different they are and the different worlds they come from, their love is enduring.
Right.
You can't apply these strict scientific... laws of physics don't apply either. Flying wouldn't work. You can't do that.
Even regardless of that, even in the real world or in the comic world, in 32 years on this earth, I've learned that there's no science to love.
Or chicks.
Or women. You're never gonna. It's not gonna make sense in reality or in the comics, my friend, at all, ever. So stop trying to make it work.
Ladies be tripping. Yo.
Oh man.
I also like when they show him with a sexual attraction to people because it's more interesting when he acts like a person and not like this. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the whole thing is that like Kryptonians. Yes, they're alien. They're aliens in that they're not from Earth. But I always get they're human. They're humanoid.
They like the shape. They like the same shape.
Right. They got body parts.
Right. Doesn't Superman have lungs and a heart and bladder and liver and all that sort of stuff? I mean, have we gone into that? How alien is he? I thought they were just humans on another planet, right?
They're humanoid, just like every other sci-fi world with humanoids.
Terran, as they call them. Yeah.
So. Well, that could be all sorts of things. That could be like the Titans from Marvel.
Right.
I tell you who didn't. I tell you who didn't care about this was Josh when he was watching Star Trek.
Yeah.
A green chick.
Yep, that's for sure. So
she played Scarlet in the G.I. Joe movie.
Did she? Was that with Scarlet?
Yep.
Oh wow, I didn't recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a question about sex, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
She's from Maine too.
Oh jeez. We'll do our best to awkwardly explain it to you while sitting you down on the couch in between.
Has anybody ever explained how love works, Dave?
All right, our first voicemail. Back to the voicemails. Thank you to everybody. We had a little problem with the voicemail line, but it's all fixed, so we encourage everybody to dial in, and we want to thank our first caller, Damon, who calls in with a little bit of a complaint.
Hello, iFanboy. This is Damon in Detroit. Just a quick thing. I know you guys enjoy the dual feature DC comics that have been coming out. You're like, oh, it's worth my $4, blah, 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 blah. Well, I've come across one that isn't worth $4 for me, but is. Well, not really. Doom Patrol. I don't like it. In my personal opinion, it's not very good, but the Metal Men backup story is awesome. It's not worth $10. It's not worth $4 for 10 pages. That's pretty much all I wanted to see if there was anybody else talking about any other books like that. Like Detective, not like, even though the art is beautiful, not liking the actual story, but liking the question story or any of the other backups that are like that. And I know they're supposed to switch, but as a collector, you know, if I don't have issues 1, 2, and 3, I'm not probably going to buy 4, 5, and 6, even though they've switched teams or switched features. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I guess that's the other side of the coin to the co-feature, which is that if you're not digging one of them, is it enough to buy for both of them? I have that example this week with Green Arrow, Black Canary. Not exactly the same, but I dislike the writer currently. I do like Mike Norton's pencils, so I enjoy writing it, but also there's Bill Sienkiewicz pencils on there as well, and I'm buying that book solely for the art now. But if you ask me, $4 for Kevin Maguire, that's a deal. I'm okay with that, personally.
It's also, talk about dense, that book.
Yep.
Is so worth the money. I mean, okay, you don't like the Doom Patrol story, but even the Metal Men story, because Dave Matias is so dialogue heavy.
Yeah,
that book takes twice as long to read as any other book.
Right. Ultimately, if you don't feel it's worth the money, then don't buy it. You know,
Worth the money to Connor,
right? Exactly.
And Ron, but if you don't want it, hey, don't buy it.
Exactly.
I'm enjoying all the co-features I'm reading, which aren't a ton, actually, when I think about it.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with these in terms of the collection later. Like, are they going to put them all together? Or are you just going to be able to buy, you know, a question trade? Or are you going to be able to buy a Doom Patrol or Metal Men trade separately?
The good news is, in DC, you'll find out in 5 years.
Yeah, totally.
I'll answer that question for you.
Yeah.
It'll be downloaded to your brain. I'm reading the Detective one, and I'm reading the Streets of Gotham one, and the Doom Patrol one, and the one in the back of Action. I like all of them. They're all good. They all enhance the book, and I feel like I'm really getting my money's worth with them.
I find it really interesting what DC's doing. I noticed an ad in Blackest Night, number 3, where it's on the left side of the page. There's an ad that says, you know, first DC gave you the world's greatest superheroes, and it's Superman, The Flash, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Batman. And he goes, then DC introduced the next wave of icons, Red Robin, Magog, Batwoman, and Power Girl. I don't know if Magog's an icon.
Fucking Magog. Why does he get his own book?
Yeah, it goes, and then now DC is shining the spotlight on your favorite characters every month and featuring, you know, the question, it's all the co-features. Which, yeah. I think is good to call attention to the co-features and to, you know, to try to build up Blue Beetle and Metal Man and Black Canary and Captain Atom and the question and stuff like that. I like the idea of what they're doing. I'm generally pro it as opposed to the Marvel where just make it $3.99 just to milk more money out of you.
Well, a lot of times they put a reprint back there. That's kind of neat. I don't ever read them, but
I'd rather have the new
it.
Story.
Yeah.
That's true.
I love the classic Marvel reprints, though.
Was the Moon Knight reprint.
So conflicted. Back. Yeah, I know. I saw that. I really liked it. All right. So like we said, voicemails was down, but it's back. So make sure you call in at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We want to hear from you. We want to get good voicemails on the show again. So call in.
And if you listen to this show, as well as our other shows every week, you might find yourself wondering, how can I help support these guys who provide me with many hours of free entertainment and make my comic book reading experience more fun, hopefully? There's two easy things you can do. The easiest ones are you can click on the banners on iFanboy, and you can check out the products and check out the services that our sponsors offer us. That's one way you can help us by doing hardly anything on your part, just clicking and reading and seeing if you like anything that they have to offer. Maybe if you do, you partake. And the other thing you can do, it's very simple, is you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Anytime you're going to use Amazon to buy stuff, and it doesn't cost you a penny more, it helps us out. It's just an extra click. It's very simple. You can even make that click your bookmark, which is what I have on my web browser, so I don't even have to go through iFanboy. I just click on Amazon, and it helps us out. Those are the two easiest things. The two best things you can do, one is you can go to ifanboy.com/store, and you can, that's where you find our T-shirts for sale, the Power Responsibility shirt and the Herm shirt, with the Herm shirts on pre-order still till October, and then the orders begin and go start going out in the mail. Both are $15. Both are limited edition shirts, and both of those really help us. If you like the shirts, pick one up. You can support us financially. You support us by showing your pride, wearing some badass T-shirts around. That really helps. And then the best thing of all is become an iFanboy member. For $4 a month to $42 a year, you get an iFanboy prize pack, which gives you some buttons, a sticker, a random comic book from one of our collections. The higher level is the $10 a month or $100 a year, which gets you the prize pack plus iFanboy members T-shirt. And the iFanboy members are always eligible for giveaways, no matter what level you are. And we're going to do a giveaway today. We're going to do some more giveaways as the months go on. It helps the show, and it also gets you some cool stuff. So we really appreciate everyone who takes the time to do all of these things, or some of them, or anyone. Really, we couldn't do the show without you, and we appreciate everyone who helps us out. So thanks.
Thank you. Definitely.
So you said something about a giveaway.
Yes.
We do.
We have random giveaway time. We need like a sound effect or something. Like
ding,
a
ding, ding, ding. Yeah. I need a bad jacket and tie that don't match. We have today.
Yay! Random giveaway time. We need a jingle. If somebody out there is like an audio guy and you want to make the iFanboy random giveaway jingle, go for it. Email it in to contact@ifanboy.com. Send an MP3 of it.
So, 10 really, seconds.
I think that bell means I need to change the topic. So no giveaway. No, we have the Top Shelf prize pack. You're going to get some books from Top Shelf. Listen to this lineup. You get Trenches. That's by Scott Morse or Mills. I forget.
Mills.
The Master Plan. Dear
also
Julia. Not Dead Julia, as it is indicated here. There's your mistake. And Essex County Volume 1-3 by Jeff Lemire. You get those for doing nothing.
Yep.
So who is our winner?
Our winner is Ryan Wynn, who's a winner, Ryan Wynn. He's also he's a comic book pro. He's currently inking Wildcats for Wildstorm, and he did some work at Top Cow. Great guy. We met him at the cons this past year, and he randomly won. He's a member. He's a paying member, and he wins.
That's 6 trades right there.
Yeah, and 3 of our favorite in the Essex County ones.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
These are great.
I had to pry those out of my dead cold hands. Wait, I'm not dead. And I have the soft cover. So congratulations, Ryan. Good job.
If you want to be involved in these giveaways, we're going to be doing them a lot in the next month or so. We've got a whole, like a big stack. I got a big box today in the mail full of stuff to give away. And boy, you know who didn't like me this morning? The FedEx guy.
Yeah, wow.
Because that was a heavy box.
And like we mentioned earlier, you know, we just did a giveaway with Iverse Comics, and we're giving away an iPod Touch. We're going to be announcing that winner shortly, so look on the website and hear it on the podcast. I mean, we're trying to come up with really cool ways to make people win by participating in iFanboy, so you got to be in it to win it.
I will make you win. We got other shows coming out our butts. We got podcasts. We got podcasts everywhere, right?
We had 3 this past week. In addition to the one you're listening to now, we had a Booksplode from Asterios Polyp. It was the book of the month. We decided to give it its own show, which we should do for all the books.
I was just going to say, maybe we should do that for all of them.
Yeah, I think the Gus and his gang show would have been kind of short. But
yeah, I think it depends on the book. But that was the Booksplode show. You can go back in the feed and find that. And behind that, you can also find the special edition Wideout show that Ron and I did about the Greg Rucka, Steve Lieber movie adaptation that came out and that no one saw. And also, our sister site, Murmur, we had the Murmur podcast episode 7. We talked about the fall TV preview. That was me and Ron and Paul Montgomery, one of the iFanboy writers, and our Murmur writer, Kelly. And that was fun. We made fun of Paul a lot.
Yeah, it was fun. He's
young. And Connor watches more TV than there is time to watch it.
12 shows, baby. Hurry up. It's Thursday.
You're like some kind of temporal field where he's taking up more space than there actually is available.
Go to ifanboy.com where you can check out all that wonderful good stuff, and you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review and all the great discussion there from our writers like Mike and Sonia and Jim and Paul and the 3 of us, and great news and discussion topics that are up on the website. And you can also go there and write comic reviews and do your pull list. It's a great place to be. If you go to ifanboy.com/about, you can get all of our social network links. You can follow us on Twitter, both the iFanboy account as well as our individual accounts, be friends on Facebook, all that fun stuff. Normally, we for the past 2 years, we've been doing a video show that you've all been enjoying. Last week, we just released the the last part of our 200th episode extravaganza in New York City with your questions. Taking a bit of a fall break, taking some time off. I'm actually going on vacation. The video show will be back later this fall, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, won't have any new shows for the next couple of weeks, so hang in there. We know it's
But if you hard. Go to iFanboy, there might be some old shows we highlight.
Yeah, we're going to be doing kind of best ofs kind of situation.
Reruns.
Yes.
Summer reruns. What do you want?
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, sexual things.
Whoa.
Wow. Try to keep those to
wait a minute.
The question earlier was a sexual question. That's right. All I was saying.
Somebody called us and they left. It was a 3-minute voicemail, and they just sort of left their phone on while they went about their day.
Nice. Yeah. That happens.
So remember, the shorter, the more likely you'll get on it.
Yes.
You just start rambling. You don't know what you're saying. Not as much.
Yep.
And if you like the show, you can write us a review on iTunes. And even better than that is to help us out by telling your friends, your comic book store buddies, people you know that like comics or all that kind of fun stuff, your mom, your mother-in-law. I tell the TV because the TV is my best friend.
Yeah, no shit. Or your jailer. You've got Stockholm Syndrome with your TV.
I do. It loves me. I love it back. It provides warmth.
Anyway,
it's warm.
Let people know about the show. Write a review on iTunes. Yes. We really appreciate it.
Reviews help people find it on iTunes. So if you haven't really been us, I saw the other day where we blew past 500. So
we missed
nice.
It. That's how fast it goes. It's amazing. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for writing reviews, and it helps. So if you haven't, just take a few seconds, throw it up on iTunes, even if you don't love the show, but it still helps. We appreciate it. So
what a fun Thank week you. This has been. Fantastic.
Good what a fun, sexy time we've had.
Yeah, what a fun, sexy time we've had. All right, until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Oh. I'm Josh. Oh.
I learned to listen. Felt like I was back at school. She talked forever about the phases of the moon. Saying everything's a cycle. You gotta let it come to you.